welcome to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And what is Idle Red Hands Weekly? It is the conspicuous expression of moral values. Academically, it relates to signaling theory and describes a subset of social behaviors that could be used to signal virtue, especially piety, among the religious. In recent years, the term has been more commonly used within groups to criticize those who seem to value the expression of virtue over action.
So we're talking about virtue signaling.
Right.
Ironically or unironically? Because there's a big difference.
It's a criticism that I have of something that we're going to discuss.
So oh, really? Okay.
Maybe I think
I know what it is, and I probably already disagree with you.
Yes. It's good. We have a little friction in this episode. What have you been up to this week?
Not a whole lot. Let's see. I think I'm going to be playing in a trophy game on Sunday, which is something I've been wanting to do for a while. If you've been following me on Twitter, I talk about it a lot. I also wasted my brain cells by watching Prometheus, or two-thirds of it, to write up some other personal agendas for Alien RPG. They're all act like a dumbass. And I am releasing some stuff on my Patreon, versions of a cloaker, a piercer, and a dusk mantle.
Oh,
so all kind of cheesy. I've filed the serial numbers off and done something else, but nice. That comes out on Friday in addition to the Spider Elf release that comes out at the end of the month. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
How about you?
So I ran the Mines of Phandelver last night. They had the first session for the 5E.
Ooh, first session, which implies there's going to be more.
I think so.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it depends on the time. We didn't go very late, but they seemed to be into it when we came to a good stopping point. So I was like, okay, let's not push it. So I want them to get back to the table.
They finished college, right?
Yes.
Okay, because you hear stories about people playing in university where it's like, you're young. You should be like going like all night as opposed to like us, where it's just like, okay, 9 o'clock. We're done. All right.
We got to go. Yeah.
So how'd it go?
It's a great adventure. It's really well structured. Yeah, I really like how the book is ordered, and they do a lot. There's great adventure hooks that you can kind of decide to go with or not. They give you a lot of flexibility. So for a first-time DM, that's what you should be doing. That's what you should be running.
All right, okay.
It's not going to break any ground as far as what happens in the story.
Okay.
And it's a bit of a mystery. Like, you know, it's a mystery that unravels. So once you've played it, you're probably not going to want to play it again because you're going to know.
It has a set ending?
No, because like you'll know too much about, we shouldn't do this. We should go here first.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
So you'll be kind of guiding the group with, you know, kind of you'll be metagaming a little too much.
Right, right. So it would be, if you did play it a second time or again as a player, it would be hard not to do that. Could you do it if you took like a non-leadership role?
Sure. If you kind of, just let people go along and just like played your character and stayed in the game. Yeah. And especially if your character's kind of motivations or connections were just to protect somebody But it was good. And they had a lot of fun doing characters. So we did characters previously.
That's right.
And they really had fun kind of subverting the ideas of what these characters should be because they knew the tropes. They knew the fantasy tropes from, PC RPGs and things. So they played a cleric and a rogue.
Okay.
And so I had to supplement that because it's basically the adventure is for 4 to 5 players.
Oh, really? Okay.
So I needed to supplement it with NPCs, which then we can turn into sidekicks. And we haven't quite decided whether or not to do that, depending on how far we're going to go. I just wanted to give them a taste of the game. And of course, like every beginning adventure of every game, it's a goblin ambush.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So your escort, it's an escort mission and a goblin ambush. So you'll expect that right away from Pathfinder.
Did they expect that?
I don't think so. No, I made it very tense. Like when the road was blocked and just like, okay, because the cleric has really high perception.
Right.
And I was trying to ramp up the tension a little bit of what's going to happen. And then they're like, so it worked okay. Yeah. I don't think they knew that that was kind of a cliche in beginning adventures for RPGs because it doesn't really happen in PC games as much.
Right.
That's,
okay.
That's not quite a trope, but definitely on the tabletop.
I was curious because as us being established players, we kind of maybe tend to think things are or are not tropes or see the tropes. So I was kind of curious, okay, this thing that quote unquote always happens in beginning level, adventures. Okay. Did beginning players expect it? It seems like they didn't. So who cares?
Right. Yeah. And I think it worked well. And so both that adventure and then the rule book from the Essentials, I have to give props to Wizards of the Coast because that is a very well put together book as opposed to like flipping and chunking through player's handbook. It's a slim volume and everything is really concise. They like just boil it down and everything that you're basically going to need for that first, maybe for the first three levels is all there and very accessible. It's from character creation to spell list to equipment list. It's not 100 pages in. It's very usable and very nice. It's as close to like a multi-page like reference sheet as you would want for early levels of 5e.
So is it laid out in a kind of like the way some scenario board games are, where the mechanics you kind of need as the adventure progress is the way they're laid out? Like you're going along the trail in front of the goblin ambush, essentially. Did they put the perception rules and kind of skill check things at the beginning as you would encounter them based on what your players do. I worded that poorly, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, in the adventure they did.
Okay.
Yeah, so in the rule book itself, it's just a very condensed version of everything you need to know. So you read through that whatever 40, 50 pages, and that's basically you're pretty well educated in what to do. And you don't really have to because there's still spell lists and things that you may not have to refer to.
So again, like 10 pages of it is really kind of the important stuff.
Yes. But for the DM sections in the Minds of Phandelver adventure, they do that. This will be your first combat. This will be the first perception. This will be, you know, you'll need to roll this versus this.
Okay.
If he's getting away, you're going to have to, you know, if they want to stop him, they have to do this. So they walk you through. So I think for a beginning DM, things are really going to click because they do a nice job of kind of teaching.
The thing that's coming to mind is the Starship Troopers board game, not the original Avalon Hill one with the skinnies and the bug burrows, which I actually have, but then the one that came out after the movie. Mm-hmm. And that was still a good one. It was laid out like, okay, here's mission one, and here's, you know, it broke it down really simply. Mm. As you played through things, as you needed the mechanics, it put them where in the text where it kind of thought they would happen. Mm-hmm. And that was really helpful.
They definitely do that in that adventure and make it really easy. You don't have to do a lot of preparation, especially for the first session for that. You just have to kind of read. And the other thing that I really like is they gave a summary of the entire adventure at the beginning. This is going to happen, this is going to happen, this is going to happen. And just kind of summarized the progression of events and named the characters, like the kind of featured characters or bosses or enemies that are going to be involved. And that was really nice because you saw the whole shape of the adventure. Mm-hmm. And then when you started, you're like, okay, now we're at this point. And then at that point, it's just really well done and really well put together. And I'm curious if we do further sessions, how it does play out, because it seems to be structured really well. And already they're kind of like, oh, what do we do this or do this? And there's there's some interesting tension and some fun. And I was able to, like, with the NPCs, kind of like nudge them directions, just kind of suggest what to do because it's the first time they play, they're overthinking a lot of stuff. Yeah.
How did they do role play wise? Because I think on a previous episode, we had kind of wondered if Critical Role was kind of their entry point to the hobby. That has pretty high production values and people do voices and stuff and they're professional voice actors. Did your players think that had to be a part of it and kind of how did they take to role playing?
It was interesting. I asked them about that. Do it however you want to do, explain what your character does, or just use your voice as your character or, you know, do a voice, like give them an accent, give them some mannerisms.
Right.
Their experience with Critical Role, funny enough, because my daughter's an illustrator, is only fan art for Critical Role. So I guess a lot of illustrators get a lot of work or a lot of attention by posting fan art of the characters from these podcast series.
Yeah, they do, yeah.
But she herself hadn't listened to any of it. But I did explain to them kind of what we had talked about, that don't be too overwhelmed by the fact that these are voice actors. You know, these may not even really be people that are that into Dungeons & Dragons. These are professional voice actors that want to make an entertaining podcast, and you don't have to do that. Play it however you want.
Right.
And I did use kind of your mechanic of, so that I know you're asking me a question and it's not your character, please like give me some kind of sign, like you raise your hand or touch your forehead so that I know you're not in character when you're saying something. And that worked really well.
Okay,
so they were able to kind of, you know, stay in the situation and kind of switch back and forth.
Right. Or I always try and use that rule and never stick with it.
Yeah, some things get too urgent.
Yeah, put that into the next generation of role players. Do this so we know whether you're in character or out of character.
Right.
Yeah.
I was really impressed because I didn't know what to expect. We unboxed the starter set and the essentials, but hadn't, you know, played them. And so playing, and it's a combination. So the Minds of Phandelver is from the starter set with pre-gen characters. And then the essentials rule book is a much better version because they don't have character creation. And they basically really, really dumbed down the original starter set rule book. You know, what is a spell? I move? It's a little bit too elementary, I think. And it's not very useful while you're playing. It may be like a nice introductory pamphlet to, you know, what this game is and what you will be doing. But as far as in-game, you'll never refer to it.
Right.
It's just so generic. It's not actual.
It doesn't answer rules questions.
Yes. You're not going to be checking rules in that particular book. But the Essentials Kit book is really nice. So I have to, definitely give them. And also, so then the campaign book that comes in the Essentials continues using that whole area and using Phandelver as the kind of place where you get further missions and quests.
Oh, kind of like your base of operations.
Yeah. That makes it a hub, an adventure hub.
Oh, cool.
And so, you know, if they like that area or if they actually just kind of want to bail on that first adventure, there's other adventure hooks you can pick up with them and it's going to keep everything on that map in that area. So there's a lot to do. I mean, it gives characters, I'm not sure kind of what the level range is, but I could imagine getting to fifth, sixth level easily in area. Yeah. With what I've seen so far.
That just sounds really good.
Something that happened.
Something that was a happening, yeah.
I kind of referred to in our in the opening of this episode is Monte Cook Games released a PDF called Consent in Gaming.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it's talking about some of the things that we've talked about before, how to handle, you know, uncomfortable situations, how to prepare a group for what kind of game they're going to be playing, and then give them tools to stop or interrupt play, or, you know, just let people know, I'm not comfortable with what we're doing, and right. I'm going to have to call this off. And I think it even goes so far as, you know, leave. You know, if it's too much, then leave. And I think it's a good thing, and it comes from a good place.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But I can smell that butt a mile away.
The critical me, the suspicious me, is saying, okay, Monty Cook Games. Okay, they have a Kickstarter out right now, so this is good promotion for them.
It's Monty Cook Games. They always have a Kickstarter. Well, that's
right. They're perpetually Kickstarting. Yeah. You know, this is good promotion, and that's why I referenced virtue signaling is, so why them? I mean, why did they feel that it was necessary above all the other and, you know, bigger, more established? I guess, you know, success-wise, they're pretty much out there. But why did they choose to do this? I mean, it is necessary. And I think individual cons should have, you know, gaming conventions should have these types of things available. Right. Because the good thing about this is it's in writing. You know, you have, okay, we're going to go by this. This is what we do. This is the procedure. This is what I want you to understand in this gaming session, how we're going to disrupt.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with your phrase, disrupt things, but okay.
But yeah, I think a lot of it, when I read through it, I'm like, okay, I understand this and I understand like pointing to something. Mm-hmm. But for me, a lot of it is, this is good if you're all new to each other or playing in a con, playing with strangers. Right. I think this is very useful. I don't think most groups, and especially established groups, have any need for this because people basically are good. I keep going back to this, and they care about each other. They, you know, they don't want to hurt each other. If they see somebody in distress, they don't pile on. I mean, on Twitter, maybe they do, or, you know, in certain, you know, comment sections, they may. People in real life, face to face, aren't malicious and trying to hurt each other. So these things with a group of people that want to continue to play and are having fun together, mm-hmm. this will never come up. But it is a good thing to actually have in writing if you need to, someone that's new to the hobby or someone that is like strangely aggressive or has a different play style, to present this to them and say, you're kind of spoiling it for everybody. My reading through this, I just felt it's very anti-fun, a lot of what that is. If you're going to talk about, you know, things that trigger you or experiences you've had that bring up uncomfortable situations, I don't see any better situation than dealing with that with a group of friends that care about you and like doing something uncomfortable and saying, oh, okay, wow. I mean, the world isn't so bad. I'm not alone in facing this, and dealing with some of those uncomfortable situations and seeing other people's expression of it or other people's management of it is a good thing and is a constructive thing. And I think that's one of the good functions of gaming groups. It does become a little therapeutic. Like, people play tall characters, they play beautiful characters, they play intelligent characters opposite of what they are in real life. Mm-hmm. And that is empowering.
Collecting my thoughts. I totally understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And I think I do agree that ultimately people are good, especially people you're going to choose to play a game with, assuming that you're friends. Because I don't know how common it is, but I tend to think it's not that common, where the people we play with here, generally we were friends first, or we became friends because of the game. So we don't have the situation where we're gaming with strangers or we're gaming with people who we just game with and kind of aren't friends with. Mm-hmm. So yes, I absolutely see these tools being used maybe more in those situations. I disagree that groups who are friends will not also need these. Mm. And again, I'm thinking of myself and the mm-hmm. thing I brought up before
right.
during Monster Hearts. And I was thinking of a second time in the game we were playing together where, well, I'll preface this by saying, I don't think role-playing games are a solution to therapy. However, I do agree they can be therapeutic. Mm. I think there's a distinction there. Mm-hmm. And I agree that, yes, friends who care about you, you can talk about them with stuff you might be going through. However, there might be stuff you don't particularly want to talk about. Mm. And you can't always predict how you're going to react to stuff that comes up during game.
Yes.
So I do think that that's what these tools are for. Mm-hmm. Like, you always kind of have the lines and veils, what's on the table, what's off the table, prior to any game starting. Mm-hmm. Eventually, if you play with people long enough, you might just learn to know what those things are. However, if they don't come up, you're not going to know about them, so you have to have that discussion first. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But yeah, sometimes stuff comes up during the game that you can't anticipate a reaction to. Like in last year's Monster Hearts campaign that we were all playing with, you were playing the Hollow. Mm. And stuff happened in-game, and it was either your character or Jamie's character ended up getting put into a brand new body.
Yes, right.
And I was going through some stuff at the time where, I'll be honest, I'd love a new body personally. And at the time, I was kind of, it didn't really hit me until after the game where I'm kind of like, oh, that kind of, it wasn't uncomfortable, but it could have gotten to the point where I didn't want to deal with that in game.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm explaining it very poorly. Mm. Like, it wasn't, but it could have been.
Uh-huh.
And it, like I said, it kind of wasn't until after the session where I really went, ah, yeah, it kind of bums me out. Given that, that is an example of why I think there needs to be safety tools at the table, irregardless of who you are playing with and mm-hmm. how long you've been playing with people.
Mm.
Just to kind of take care of those emergency situations. And one of the things that was in the Monty Cook consent and gaming thing that I thought was really good is there was a section on what to do after you've had a slip up or after you've kind of not broken consent, but it's like you've made a mistake because it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Here's how you kind of, or here are ways you can resolve that situation. And here you can do it. So it wasn't just why you should do it and tools. Mm-hmm. It was why you should do it, tools, and kind of what to do if things have kind of gone wrong.
Yeah, that was the reestablishing consent.
Yeah, reestablishing consent
and all that
stuff. So the answer to, I guess, your early question of why? Okay, sure. Maybe it's because they have a Kickstarter and this is publicity. And I mean, I saw this on Twitter before we were talking about it and I curate my feed pretty well, so I didn't see anyone being dickheads about it.
Mm-hmm.
But the people who wrote this were obviously getting expected, unfortunately, shit for it and saying stuff like, okay, all the comments we're getting about why you don't need this or I think that they were saying stuff like people getting angry about a book we are not forcing you to read and you don't have to read is exactly why a book like this is necessary.
Mm.
Sure, it may have been publicity. Why Monty Cook Games did this, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think they do deserve some kudos for actually being a relatively big name company to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is me saying it, who actually wants a refund of Numenera
right.
and would probably never touch another Cypher system or Monty Cook Games with a 10-foot pole.
Mm-hmm.
So props to them for doing it. Sure, maybe it's, you know, not commercialization, it's publicity, but it's still something that needed to be made.
Mm.
That's funny. I was actually talking with someone on Twitter who was before this came up, mm-hmm. and they asked kind of for safety tool examples because they were going to be running a game with strangers and I wanted to make sure everything was okay. And I, of course, suggested the X card. We were discussing one of the downsides of the X card is actually having to physically tap it or raise it or point to it or draw attention to the fact that you are mm-hmm. doing this, which in and of itself can be kind of uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So as much as I like the X card, and there are other safety tools out there that are kind of variations or not on the X card, it's not without problems or not without issues. And honestly, I don't think any tool is not going to have pros and cons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a funny thing that I saw in the comments where this PDF was posted is people were actually very positive and very enthusiastic. I'm glad to see something like this. You know, thank you for posting that here. And someone had a very funny comment and they're like, does it contain rules for punishing players for breaking these rules? wait. If you're playing with a group where you can't wait to punish your players for disrespecting the
maybe
table.
Maybe don't be the GM.
Yeah, that sounds like an uncomfortable gaming group. I thought that was a pretty funny comment. But you yourself do play often. You run the monthly RPG sessions for the JIG, for Kansai JIG.
Mm.
So you are dealing with people that are new groups, new combinations of players. So do you think something like this is useful? I mean, depending on the game you're playing and depending on people's familiarity with tabletop, do you think that this would work well in that situation to basically, and I think things like the checklist mm-hmm. at the mm-hmm. end to kind of present. So take a look at this, and if there's anything editing it for what's going to possibly come up in your session, if there's anything here that would not be okay with you.
Sure, like I wouldn't hand, I think it's only like 14 pages, but I wouldn't hand that PDF to new people and say, hey, read this before we play the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like I would take stuff that's in it and use it for some kind of like, you know, 5-10 minute spiel at the beginning
mm-hmm.
or you know, enact these tools or go like, okay, here's how I run these games, yada yada, go through a little bit and like use the tools and ideas from it. But I think it is pretty decent product, and I do think that this kind of stuff should be normalized.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy to see them putting it out.
Yeah, and I'm surprised something like this, like we don't have examples of this from different gaming conventions, because it seems
we might actually not that I go to that many conventions, but it does seem like an increasing number of conventions are using things like this at mm-hmm. their table.
Mm. Well, that's good. Yeah, so I thought it was worth bringing up, and I was hoping that your dislike of Monty Cook Games would get you on my side.
You know, I said it, but I retweeted that thing, and I almost thought about doing, you know, that spiel about I kind of want a refund, I will never read on the games, but, and I thought that was a bit too much. I'm trying to be more positive on Twitter, so.
Good.
I'll be snarky as hell here, but I still think, it's great that they put it out. Happy to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's free too, so.
Mm. And I think I brought this up before, but I think companies do need to be careful, going back to virtue signaling. It can't be a competition to, because, you know, the tabletop market is very crowded, and mm-hmm. to get noticed and to get new customers and to get attention, that should not be a method. It should not be, hey, look how good we are. Look at the good that we're doing. Because I feel that approach, especially business-wise, if people don't understand your underlying kind of capitalist intentions, they're going to misinterpret it. And basically what's going to happen is, if you've ever played any of the Battle Royale games where you've got this closing circle, it's like the good company is going to, you know, get the chicken dinner at the end. There's only going to be one good company, and all the others are going to fall outside that circle. And so, you know, who's going to win that? That's an unwinnable thing. And I think a very unworthy company is going to be the winner of that.
Sure. Unless and until D&D puts something out like this, I don't think that's a problem for them.
Right. No, that's true. That's true.
they're kind of too big to fail.
Yes.
So,
Chris, what is wrong with me?
Do you want me to answer that question on air?
So last week I was talking about Bitterlands, and there is no such thing as Bitterlands.
Okay.
I don't know. I think I misread, because I saw a mock-up of the book cover, and I think I misread that or something. But it's Bitter Reach.
Bitter Reach.
And because as I was saying Bitterlands, I'm like, that's a terrible name. And especially if it's
I thought it was a play on Forbidden Lands, and then you're doing Bitterlands. Yeah, okay.
And maybe that's why it stuck in my head. But I apologize for being so misleading, and I have to like actually maybe edit that out of our hashtags and things.
Oh, we actually edit stuff. Okay.
But it's not Bitterlands. Forbidden Lands, Bitterlands. It's Bitter Reach. So the Bitter Reach Kickstarter launched on September 11th. And it's a huge expansion, like more than 200 pages for Forbidden Lands. And it's going to send you kind of to the icy north across the mountains. So there's new rules, new monsters and encounters, and a completely new campaign, The Wake of the Winter King. So this is all, everything taking place north of the Ravenlands. So the Ravenlands was the original setting for Forbidden Lands.
Have a lot of Corvids in it?
Probably. Okay. And this is going to be, what they're going to do is also do a reprint of the original core box, because it's completely sold out.
Oh,
like, if you want to play Forbidden Lands, PDF only at this point.
Right.
So they're going to do those nice leatherette, you know, embossed, beautiful books they did. And they're going to include some additional art and also the errata that we talked about.
Right,
so
the
rule clarifications and kind of changes that they needed from the previous edition. So that's all available on the Kickstarter. And so basically with this Kickstarter, you can catch up to everything, because they're offering everything from the last Kickstarter, including the new printing, plus all the dice and the cards and the GM screen.
I do like catch-up Kickstarters or catch-up products,
I think that helps a lot. And I think it's a good thing for them to be doing this, because Forbidden Lands has gotten so much attention and so much positive press. So to have a chance to catch up and get everything and you know, bring that to your group is a good thing. So that's running for the next month. We'll put a link to that in the information for this episode. And so check that out if you're interested in catching up on Forbidden Lands. It's well worth it. And the product itself, the books are tiny. They're like A5 or they're smaller books. They're so nice. They're so well designed. And if you watch the unboxing we did, I had no idea what I was going to be looking at. Just saw the mock-ups on the Kickstarter and opened up the whoa. Yeah,
it's pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, it really nerds you out. And the the pages are, you know, kind of ivory off-white.
Oh, nice.
And they have a nice everything has a nice look and feel to it, and it's great. They're going to include new art and kind of update things. So check that out.
So I've been trying to stay off Kickstarter, even though some stuff I've been looking at. Something that I am excited about is a trophy incursion writing contest.
Oh, nice.
So Trophy is an RPG of tragic fantasy by Jesse Ross. That's the game I'm going to play in this Sunday. Mm-hmm. It's a collaborative storytelling game about a group of treasure hunters on a doomed expedition into a forest that does not want them there. The kind of basic idea is, as your characters progress deeper and deeper into the forest claims more and more of you and kind of tempts you with all this stuff. So you're treasure hunters, but you're probably not going to escape alive. Or if you are, you're going to be just horribly broken. So you kind of got to lean into that.
Mm-hmm.
Incursions are what they call their scenarios, and they're kind of structured in a specific way. And I should mention that the Trophy RPG rules are available in the Dark 2 Codex. That's the monthly gaming magazine put out by the Gauntlet.
Mm.
It's freely available. And it's also awesome that the creator put incursion creation rules in those rules.
Mm.
So they said, here's how I write an incursion, and kind of went through all the steps. So you actually have guidelines on how to write your own incursion, which I think is pretty cool, which leads me to the incursion writing contest, which is currently running. You have to submit before midnight on October 6th.
Mm.
So you still have about solid like 2 or 3 weeks to do it. Less than 3,000 words. Prizes. They're going to pick, not randomly, but they specifically say, don't put your name on it.
Ah.
because we're going to pick blind. Mm-hmm. First prize is $200 prize. Second, there's two second prizes, which are $50 each. If they choose to publish it, mm-hmm. you still retain all rights to whatever you wrote, meaning you can publish it other places you want. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get paid 6 cents a word, which is kind of their standard mm-hmm. for publishing. Everyone who enters also gets a pair of dice, two dark dice, mm-hmm. unless you just submit something to get the prize or kind of send an obvious joke. But I think that's really cool. I'm going to maybe try and enter it. They said you don't have to stick to the default setting of a forest. You can kind of drift it to other places if you want. Mm-hmm. I mean, you still kind of have to do follow the structure. Otherwise, the game's not really going to work. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to try that. And I think other people should too.
Yeah.
I was also talking to the creator on Twitter, of course. And I said, wow, the trophy stuff looks really nice. What font did you lay everything on? And mm-hmm. he goes, oh, it's all this brrr, and gave me like more information than I could have ever asked for. It's like, this nice. Is for the headline. This is for the whatever. This is for mm-hmm. the, right? And yeah, I thought that was really cool. So if I actually do write something, maybe I'll lay it out. Mm-hmm. So it looks real fancy and nice. But
excellent. Yeah. Good. So we'll put a link for the contest and for the game itself and everything in the.
I think they're going to do a Kickstarter, or they're gearing up for a Kickstarter soon.
Okay.
Because the game's a couple months old now. Other monthly magazines or other monthly issues of Codex have kind of regularly, since it came out, said, here's another incursion, here's another incursion. Mm-hmm. And some of them come with new backgrounds or character types or kind of like new spells your character can use. So I think the Kickstarter version is maybe going to be an expanded one of that, or a collection of all the incursions.
Oh,
I mean,
cool.
Not the ones that get submitted to the contest, but just ones that they have already written.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So a comment that we got on our YouTube.
Because we love them.
Page, yes. And surprisingly, we're surprisingly doing okay. YouTube is a pretty brutal place.
I was just going to say, I was never go there.
We had a comment about, it was the final, they had watched the entire live stream.
Oh, nice.
It seems, and they were commenting on a choice, a call that I made during the Alien RPG session. And it was something that came up, and I'm blaming Lyle for this.
Okay,
I think it was Lyle that actually did this. And once I kind of, it clicked like how that's going to speed things up and how that might work, I was like, okay, let's do that. The comment from WT2014 says, something I feel I need to mention, Alien is retro sci-fi. Nowhere in the movies do we see a ship's computer being able to detect life forms. A large part of the tension comes from only having a motion detector to give you warnings that something is in the area. So letting the players know exactly where the enemy is largely dissipates the suspense and removes any surprise. And that's very true.
That's fair. Yeah. Having watched a bunch of them, mm-hmm. the earlier trilogy, all you do have is that motion tracker. Maybe they can identify number of life forms, mm-hmm. but not pinpoint location. It's not until like Prometheus that you get kind of like the, you know, pinpoint accuracy stuff, which is odd because it's supposed to be before Alien.
That's that same problem that like new Star Trek is having. It's like it's way the screens and everything are amazing compared to and Star Wars as well.
Yeah.
No, so that's what I said. It's like, I basically had to make that call. And after I did that, I really couldn't take it back. But for our limited time for our sessions, I thought to do like points of interest mm-hmm. would be much more useful, because I don't think dungeon crawling that ship would have turned this into a six month campaign.
Yeah. You can't.
And so I tried to raise attention, and immediately I thought, you know, that's also going to be good for a synthetic reveal. Mm-hmm. And neither of those things worked particularly well, because the players were calling bullshit the whole time on this. That's what it did, is it did undermine the horror and the tension, because you're not cautiously, you're not getting some alert of there's a life form, and you're not consciously moving. You're like, here and here, where do we go? Mm-hmm. And so it took away a lot of the atmosphere. And I don't think I would do that again, because I do think that the comment is correct. It's the retro sci-fi and that, like, you know, your limited resources mm-hmm. and the tension of not having any control of what's going on, I think works really well. And then they did right after I confessed, it wasn't on a smart move. The commenter said, every time that came up, he's yelling at the stream, this is not Star Trek. What are you playing? So we upset people. And I did say that the reason that I thought I could go with that was Prometheus, that 3D map mm-hmm. and like how they were detecting things in the temple made me say, let's go with that, because I think that would work. So it's kind of in universe, but still at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not great. So I'm still glad that people are paying attention to that playthrough. And I think because of the interest in that game, I think people have a lot of interest in that game. And I do respect Free League very much for not kickstarting that game.
It's
and
a great
just,
game.
Yeah. Just going straight. And that cinematic adventure is a really nice idea.
I love that cinematic. Yeah. Like so, I said, I'm trying to come up with a way to kind of run a second session mm-hmm. after the events in that first one shot I ran. Interestingly enough, in my game, despite handing out the motion tracker, nobody used it.
Wow.
Nobody used the motion tracker.
Yeah.
What you said about, if you turn that game into a dungeon crawl, it'll take forever. Mm. It absolutely will. Mm-hmm. So I did something kind of you did, where it's like, okay, you want to go here to here. It'll kind of take you roughly this amount of time. Mm-hmm. Give me a mobility roll. Nobody really seemed to care about being stealthy. Mm-hmm. And I also didn't introduce any antagonists until midway through. And then they were kind of set in where they were staying. And it wasn't until the end that something real horrible popped out. Yeah, I agree. And in the game, they kind of suggest have two maps, almost kind of like Space Hulky. One that the players see that they move around on, and one that you see to track your hidden kind of whatever is moving around stuff. And I didn't do that, but I could see doing it.
Right. Because,
yeah, you don't want to say, it's here, 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 and here, which does kind of, mm-hmm. I mean, you could give general area.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's something around Medbay.
Yeah, right.
Oh, great. Also, since it's horror, and we talked about this before, pushing to have them a reason to go back would also be something good. Oh, great. We know it's in Medbay. Great. Well, then the thing you're going to need to get beyond Medbay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Good luck.
Yeah. Right, right. That did come up a little bit, like not wanting to go past things. Mm. Oh, to get there, we got to go past that. We know that's no good.
Yeah, that happened in my game. Like something popped out of the ceiling in one of the science labs, and after the player ran from it, they're like, not going back there. Something in science lab, screw it. We don't need it. Not going.
That would be great if you get new agendas made. It would be fun to go back and do another session.
I'll just make them all based on Prometheus. You are a horrible dumbass. And watch them all just go, yeah, yeah.
Where can people find you?
I've mentioned it before. You can find me on Twitter. My Patreon is at Fantastic Fate Resources. That's also my blog. Stuff goes up on both of those. I'm also a little bit on Facebook, but yeah, Twitter, Hivemind, HYVEMYND.
And I do a weekly live stream of my cartoon at abusecartoons.com and on Twitch, twitch.tv/abusecartoons. If you'd like to follow the cartoon, at abusecartoons on Twitter. And that's every Sunday night, North American time, kind of Monday afternoon, morning in the East.
In the East, yeah. Well, you didn't say the Orient.
If you'd like to follow Idle Red Hands on Twitter at Idle Red Hands, the website, of course, idleredhands.com. That'll give you links to the YouTube podcast and any downloadables. And also, if you'd like to support the podcast and get involved, please visit patreon.com/idleredhands. And that's it for this week. Yep. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye. Yeah.